Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Mark Laurie, CEO and photo artist at Inner Spirit Photography, a female portrait photography company. Founded in 1980, they create wonderful, emotional, and moving images of women for themselves or as gifts to others. And I've asked Mark to join us here today to talk about surviving the seasons of business and life for over 40 years, plus his take on the business of art. So, Mark, thank you so much for joining us, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Happy to be here. This is exciting.
Yeah, me too. It is good. So how did you even get into business? Like, do you come from a family of entrepreneurs?
No, actually, I didn't. I got into it. I was a realtor at the time, and real estate was 24/7. I took it very seriously, of course, and I needed a break. So I borrowed my wife's camera, and I started in photography. Migrated really, really quickly to photographing women doing nudes, and it just evolved from there. And it was back in 1980 when I started. I actually picked up the camera in 78, so I transitioned from 78 to 80 pretty quickly, my own company. But it was a different time back then. Calgary was like one third the population it was now, very deeply conservative kind of area, and I was offering boudoir nudes. And the photography community was horrified, like, well, how are you going to market that? And I go, I'll put an ad in the Yellow Pages that says nudes. Should work.
It's like Bare Naked Ladies, the band, right? That's what everybody came to the concert.
And nobody else was offering it at the time. Like, boudoir photography was just starting to emerge. In fact, in the next couple of years after I started, I was winning awards and having a good time. I trained one guy, figured out about 95% of the photographers in Canada and a lot of the ones in the States on how to approach boudoir photography. I was about 25 at the time. So it was, one of the things that was kind of cool is I had, because my styles evolved quite a bit to storytelling, I build exotic sets and so on. And I had two people came in for a photo shoot. And what I did, the first girl, we couldn't get together and she suddenly just appeared to me. And we were kind of lost. Like, we didn't really have a focus. She just appeared, took her clothes off. It wasn't exceptional. The second girl, we had a Western set, and I got props, and we borrowed a guy's fast draw gun. And my God, we took photographs for like hours, and we changed sets, and it was just, I thought, this is the way to do this. This is really, really cool. But the first one was kind of funny though. As a realtor, you can imagine, I'm just starting off. I'm looking for people I can photograph. And there's the mortgage officer who I used had a beautiful 20 something secretary, blonde girl. And so I was in his office and I was thinking, gee, we concluded. I said, do you think Karen would be interested in being a model for me for a photo shoot? You know? And he goes, I don't know. And my thought was I would leave. He would ask her, like grade 7 stuff. And then he would get back and see, she's interested, give her a call, something like that. Right. Nope. He's like much older. I mean, he smiles and he presses his button that says his intercom button. He goes, so Karen, can you come in here for a second? Mark's got a question for you. I'm looking like, what? And I remember this thought crossed my mind, which was, I could go through that window. We're only two stories up. Like, I could do that. So Karen comes in with a little notepad and she's all perky and stuff. And she goes, what? She says, oh, Mark's got a question for you. I look at her like, oh, so, well, I'm a photographer. Would you be interested in like, doing some photography stuff? Yeah, that'd be fun. And so it evolved. And we're doing the photo shoot and we're doing all Western stuff. But I really wanted to do this new thing. And my wife had long gone to bed. So I had the whole thing that triggered the Western set was this Playboy photograph. It's a magazine thing of a girl with cowboy boots on, a gun belt, a Western gun, which we had, and a cowboy hat. And that's it for facing the camera. And so she said, what else could we do? I go, well, we could do something like this. And I was, chicken to the weather. I couldn't say anything. I just showed her the photograph, right? And she goes, that's cool. She says, we should do that. And proceeds to undress and put the hat on. I'm thinking, this is really good. We should do this. And so we photographed for 2 more hours, right? And then I finally crashed, went to bed. She went home. And Jan says, so how was the show? I said, it's great. Like, I'm so excited, vibrating. So how did she look good? I think so. I'll have to look at the photographs. I can't remember because I get so focused on what I'm doing and really not looking, if you should call that. Like, I'm seeing the client, but I'm not staring or absorbing it. This is, light. And so it wasn't the next day that I looked, I was black and white and I processed my own film. I go, oh, these are really cool. And they still kind of hold up today. So it was fun. That was kind of my start.
That is
my education at the time. Yeah, it was. We've had so many adventures. We've always, I've entered a lot of contests. I've always taken on everything I could. So we've done magazines and I've got several books out there. We did one book, which was in the Bahamas. It's called Nude in Paradise. And the model was a client of mine. She's an amazing, amazing woman. And she flew in from Hong Kong to Bahamas. And that's like a 26-hour flight or something.
Long flight.
So she arrives about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. And we've got this short window because she's got to go back on Sunday night. And so we start photographing that night. And then we finish and she goes to bed. We got up at 4 o'clock in the morning. She did her makeup. We were getting the sunrise. And we just photographed steady throughout the whole day. And we got places that no one else, my friend down there was really well connected. And so I got into places that no one else could kind of get into. It's really cool.
That sounds great.
I've had fun.
Yeah. That sounds fantastic. So what have been some of the biggest challenges, obviously? I mean, through the years, you know, there's been good economies, bad economies. There's been changing, maybe perhaps there's been criticism of, you know, like the taboo-ness of some of the, you know, the photography that you've done, perhaps. I don't even know, but what have been some of the challenges? Obviously, you still have to market and sell.
Yeah. The old days, we'll call them the old days. There's my little thing here. They were kind of fun. Marketing was simple. Like I would take out two trade shows, and we always did a huge booth involved with charities. We've donated $512,000 to charities over the years, which we're kind of proud of. And we took our Yellow Page ad was huge. If for people don't know about that, in the old days, we used to have this big yellow book and it had all, that's where businesses would advertise with phone numbers and stuff. And I always made sure my ad was three times bigger than the next biggest size ad with it. And then I'd take out two times a year, take out a double page spread in color in the sun, which is kind of a tabloid thing here for it. And that'd be my year. That would be great. And then, you know, when the internet kind of came along, we had one of the, I was told the third photography website when the internet got activated. So we had the third one that was a photography site, I guess. Wow. It was kind of ours way back in the day. And then, you know, social media comes along and I really enjoy it. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's powerful and we're getting deep into the AI things, which is changing our industry. I've lived through three of my camera systems that have gone obsolete, that they don't even make them. They don't repair them. It's a bizarre experience to have when you get into that. So the transition from that marketing and the other thing we had that was a big shift. For the longest, everybody was terrified of what I do, the nudes and the lingerie. And so they didn't know how to add to their systems. It was so great. And then about 15 years ago, we had speakers that come through and say, great, to all the photographers, here's how you shoehorn this into your business. And here's what you say. And here's 20 poses to work with. And so overnight we had, you know, like 30 competitors, you might say. and one guy was so cute. We hired marketing people because I, you know, believe in hiring good people to kind of move things along. And so the first thing they did was check other websites. So how's it look? What do you think? He says, well, they're all mimicking you. And I said, how do you know that? He says, well, for example, one of them, they just copy and pasted the stuff that you said in your website. And so how do you know that? Because they forgot to take your name out of the copy and paste. So there it was. So he always says, yeah, so this section here, this is where your website is. And that's kind of how it started, you know, back then. So we started off, the first big challenge was I knew nothing about photography.
Right.
And there's no training back then. Like today, photographers starting off have got no grasp of how rich and easy it is to learn stuff. It's just everywhere. It's free and paid and so good. Back then, there were, especially for boudoir photography, we'd have a speaker blow into town for weddings and I'd take it because he'd teach me lighting. I got just anything. So I had to learn, you know, book learning. There's a guy that had a book that was my Bible. It was great. And one of the quotes he had was, if you look at the shadows in a photograph, you can figure out where the lights are.
Mm.
And so I'd study his photographs. So I'm in a hair salon one day and I'm studying this centerfold that Playboy had, very complicated lighting. I'm not even looking at the girl. I'm mentally trying to imagine where these lights are that light her, right? I'm looking at this for way too long. And this old guy beside me, his name gets called and he gets up to get his haircut and he goes by and says, so, Sonny, you like her? I hadn't even looked at her. I'm like, what? Oh, yeah, she's nice, I guess. So, I mean, when I started off, I was broke. I didn't have we didn't say, oh, I got, here's $100,000, let's invest. Like we had to steal and build and so on. So I borrowed a light meter one time because I have flash, and this is my studio. Like what you see behind me here is my, was my original studio, consultation room, everything. So where the back room is, that was my studio. I had fabric paper rolls up in the ceiling that kind of come down. And I rented, borrowed a guy's light meter, and I would took an umbrella, and I had light bulbs inside of it because I had a flash. And then every foot, because that's light falls off every foot, right? The inverse trail law, there's some education for it. And I take a meter and I put a knot on it, and I write a little note saying, you know, F8 and F11 and so on. So then I'd go photograph a client and I'd wheel my light in, and I'd simply take the whatever F stop I wanted, put that onto her nose where the little tab was, and then go back. And that was my lighting. That's how base I was when I learned. Like I really didn't. I mean, one day I had Jan's dad had a light for video and had five light bulbs on it in a row, and not knowing anything about lighting, I was using it without a, because I needed more light. And I got five shadows in the background. I had no idea where they're coming from, right? And it's because each light bulb was 1 inch over from the other, so they would cast. So people thought, oh, that's so cool. How did you do that? I don't know. I'm trying to get rid of it. Like, you know, enlighten me. So we had that kind of happening. It was just great and wonderful. We got in, we did, our work was so well received, and we're used to the, but in the 80s, we were studied by psychiatrists from the General Hospital. They had a program for rape and abuse victims, which we do, it turns out, a lot of work with. And every time they went through the parole committee, you'd leap one or two stages, and my name came up. So he studied all my clients for a year. Did an interview just before the session, just after the session, and then sometime later. And he found to the woman, every woman was either in the middle of coming out of going through great personal change. If that didn't exist, we were invisible. His belief was that no matter, I could give it away because, and they wouldn't take it because we just weren't that kind of studio. Like we seemed to have more substance than other guys who were sort of offering it. And so we, and to this day, we discovered that we dig a bit deeper. We discovered that, yeah, we deal, and some of the people who come in are dealing with horrendous things. We had one client that came in, and she was trying to find safe spaces, and her psychologist had said, look, you're missing whole years of your life that you can't remember because your brain's trying to save you. And as soon as you move into a place that you feel safe, the brain will release that. It's cool. So she hit my studio. My studio is, it's a very safe place. People have called it a room. It's got heated floors, and there's no windows, and there's soft music playing, and it's like a fantasy land. And so we're finishing the photo shoot up, and she gets really pale, and she sits down on the couch, and I go, you okay? Like, what's going on? She says, well, I just got unlocked. And that's her phrase, because of the happiness she's been going through. I said, so, like, what? She says, well, I can't remember my childhood because my parents tried to kill me. I'm like, what? And she says, yeah, I remember this. I was conscious. My parents beat me until they thought I was dead, didn't want me to die. And they got in the car and they drove 30 miles or something. They threw me in the ditch and left me, and they drove away with no identification. And the people who I grew up with found me, and they brought me back to health. And that's, this must be a really safe place for me to unlock. I said, yeah, you got to talk to somebody because that's beyond my pay scale.
Yeah.
I do photography, but
yeah, like I'm a photographer. This is crazy.
Yeah. And so we've had dramatic things. We're clients. So we had one client that came in, and we photographed her several times, and she was so cool. And I said, so what's changed your life with us, like the interaction to it? And she says, well, I thought about it. She's talked about the empowerment it gave her and the confidence. And she says, you know, I'm making $80,000 more a year than I would have if I hadn't been photographed by you and spent time with you in the studio. And I kind of go like, how's that work? And she goes, well, when you met me, I hid in a garage. She's a heavy duty mechanic, big trucks and buses and stuff. She says, I was happy back there. Like I just didn't, like I dark corner, just do my little thing. She says, but you, these photographs, this experience, it gave me the feeling that I could do anything. And I could do more than being a mechanic in a garage. And so she said, I just started up getting new jobs. I felt I had skills to get a better job, but I'd go out and get a better job. She says, now I'm making $80,000 a year that I don't think I would have been making because of this whole thing. Yeah. We've had numerous women that tell me that the photo session gives them so much power, so much confidence. We've had 30 photo sessions result directly in marriages.
Wow.
It's cool. Is that cool?
That is really cool. That's really
We had
cool.
one girl that came in and oh she I'm just I'm in love with my story. She came in and she we're doing a photo session. She says, "You know, my one wish is that I'd love to be married." And I start here got a kid. And she says, "I, you know, I've been married. I've been with this guy, and he's really sweet, but he's not romantic. I'm not romantic bone in his body. He would never think to say, do you want to marry me?" She says, "I'm not going to force it. I'm not going to, you know, do the you should marry me kind of thing. It's got a good life. It's just it'd be nice." I said, "Well," as I gave her the, she picked the book up. She had a series of books. I mean, you create books kind of like this here, which is kind of neat. So she bought one of these. I said, "Well, tell him that a studio policy, only husbands can see the books." She said, "That's silly." So I'll have fun with it, you know. So she says, she told me later, she said, I don't know what overcame me. He says, "Oh, that's a book. Can I see it?" She goes, "No, you can't. I had to sign papers. That studio says only husbands can see it. Like we're together, but you're not a husband." "Oh yeah, that's right. That makes sense." I don't know why that would make sense. That makes, you know, but he goes, "Yeah, that makes sense. You know, you sign stuff." So a week goes by or so, and he comes back and he's all excited. He says, "Listen, I talked to our friends, and 6 months from now there's an opening, and the church is available, and the guy said he'd marry us. Do you want to get married like in 6 months? You know?" And he, she goes, "Yeah, that'd be really good." "Cool. Can I see the book?" No, she says, "You're just a fiance now. It's the husband thing, right? Sign papers." "Oh, right. Yeah, that makes so much sense. I'll wait." So a week goes by and he says, I talked to the minister and he has an opening in 2 months. And our friends are available. So like, what do you say?" And she says, "Good, we can do that. And then I can see the book, right? On that night, I can see the book." And she goes, "Mark, it's like not like this is hidden territory. We sleep together. I sleep nude. He sleeps nude. We got a kid, you know. But somehow this book, it was
That's fantastic. That's a
so
great story. Bringing families together, bringing people together.
yeah, it's powerful stuff that we work with. It's we deal with, I mean, we've got some tragic stuff we deal with. One client that came in, we're doing prenatal work, and she was huge. Her tummy was huge. She knew, her family knew the baby was not going to survive. Its lungs had not developed. So it would live about 30 minutes outside of the womb. And there's nothing anybody could do about it. There was no magical science. The lungs were not developed. It could not do it. So it had it. She had a name. They knew what sex it was. Every night, the family would corral and they'd caress the tummy and they had. I this still gets to me too. And they'd talk to her, the baby, and they'd sing songs. And she was part of the family for 9+ months. I mean, she held on as long as she could. And she tasked me with doing a photograph that showed the baby was part of the family, that it was loved, but not too modern. Like it's a fine line because you can't get all mopey about it. And yet you can't get too frivolous. So we had to walk this very, very fine line. And I have to control the emotional environment with my clients as well as I guide them. And so we had to make sure that she didn't kind of fall apart and that she didn't feel aloof as well in the photographs. And she felt we accomplished that. So it's neat. We had a client that came in a while ago. Her Because we'd photographed his wife. They're potato farmers, and she was a novel lady. She was so cute. She came in and we asked her what kind of session she wanted. She said, "Well, these legs are just built for walking and the butt that's attached to them," and she was a bit more plain in her language. "It would just services the legs and these breasts, they've serviced three children and there's not much left. But he loves that free patch of real estate in the middle, so that's what we're gonna focus on." Yeah, okay. So we did this great photo shoot, and then years passed, and he appears on my doorstep, and he says, he's explaining his wife had passed away from cancer. "Do you have those photographs still?" And our photographs go back to 1980. I've got archives in boxes to 1980. And I
Wow.
said, "We do." He says, "Great. I'd like prints of all of them, please." I said, "Cool." Well, he said, "Oh," he says, "one request: don't retouch anything. I want every wrinkle, every flaw that you captured there. That was her. She was real. And that's what we did." And so we get this full range of needs for people that come in that is, I don't know, it's very privileged to be part of it. It really is.
Yeah, I'm getting emotionally touched by some of these stories. They're really powerful. They're really powerful. And I love how you talk about controlling the emotional environment with clients. For me, that it just I don't know why it reminded me of that movie, Robin Williams, What Dreams May Come, when you talked about
Oh
her.
man, that is, yes, that's an amazing movie.
Right. But that when you talked about for her that they wanted to do something for the baby, but you had to walk the fine line between giving her something that will constantly, you know, take her to a bad place versus something that will, you know, be a cherished memory. And so that really jumped at me because that's I feel like that's what that movie's kind of about a little bit is how do you enjoy life while walking the line between the two. So
we've had clients come in who were sick and will not see, they'll pass away before the book would arrive from Italy. We had one time that I told the people in Italy, that's where books are printed in Italy. And they upspeeded this, in this one case, the book, oh God, by weeks. It usually takes about 3 weeks to get the book. And they had it done inside of a week and in her hands so she could see it before she passed. She could give it to her husband. And her statement was, she said, look, this disease, it's going to take my future. It's going to take seeing my children evolve, getting married, graduate, and so on. It's going to take me from my husband, who she was so connected to. She said, but it's not going to take my spirit. It's not going to take my expression of love. And it's not going to take my sexuality, my joy of being sensual. And that's what I was tasked to create. That's what she said. You've just got to do this for me. But we've getting those. And it's not all like that. Like we also get people that come in and say, I'm looking hot today. Like, let's do something. And so we get the full range and it's exciting.
Can you speak to that a little bit? Because there's a stereotype of the starving artist per se. So when it comes to marketing and selling and pricing your art, you know, do you have any tips for anyone that's out there?
I guess if I mentor this an awful lot. Now I was very fortunate. I started, there's a speaker that was so cool. He was like over the top. And I met him later. He was like, he was mellow. And he said, like, I got to be over the top because if I told you in a crowded lecture hall, you know, increase yourself 20%, you'd increase yourself 2%. So he goes over the top and he tells people to like go for 80%. Yep. And then one of the things he said is that I'm not here for all of you. Most of you are just going to enjoy this presentation. It'll be fun. I'm here for three of you. There's three of you in the audience that are going to listen, you can hear what I have to say. And one of the things he had to say was every 6 months, increase your prices. You're probably charging less than what you should. And you will go through better quality. I mean, you've got to afford stuff, right? When you have your prices, and a lot of people don't, they don't value their time. Yes. And so I climbed up and I discovered as my prices, and I created, I was a strategic coach, and I created this concept. And it's, it doesn't matter where you are in this concept, like where your prices are, these five situations always exist. And it doesn't matter what the industry is. I've had people tell me this model works applicable to everything else. The first level is that they're the people that say, what, are you nuts? You're charging that for this? Like, you're insane. Nobody does that. Like, drop your price, be reasonable. And they're really, they're very good at it too, because this is how they get deals, right? So these people are skilled to making you feel bad and that you're overcharged and you're not worth what you're charging. The next group of people, they're different. They see you as being expensive, but they see your value, especially if you're an artist. And they're prepared to do layaway plans, to do whatever it takes to get whatever it is that you're offering, because they value it so much. The next group of people is the average one. They're the ones that think you're great, think your prices are fine, and they hire you. The next group of people are the ones that know you're not charging your true value yet, and you're a fine. You're the secret fine. And so they really cherish you, and they appreciate and may mention that you should be charging more because you're not charging what you offer, right? Because you tend to over deliver, right? That's the phrase. The next group of people, and they're the fascinating ones, they don't hire you because they know that for what you're charging, you can't give them what they want, what they need. One guy told me that flat out. He said, because I said, really good, I got all these things. He says, yes, Mark, I don't know what it's going to be, but there's going to be something, an experience, a quality level, a product level, something that at your price point, you can't possibly deliver. Because as you go up in your prices, you increase what you're delivering. It could be you start off and you're working out of the back of your car, and then you can afford a shop on the expense of that, you know, Fifth Avenue, so to speak.
Right.
But they know that it says, so come back to me. When you're charging more, we'll talk again.
I really like that.
Yeah. Powerful, I thought.
I really like that. They say when people pay, they pay attention. When they pay more attention. You
that
know?
Is, that's very valid. And so as this model works, as you increase your prices, the faces of those five people change, but what they do in that system doesn't change. As you move up, you double your prices. You've got a whole new, I find though, you don't have as many people kicking you down. Now, for my particular business, I discovered I started off at $5 a night by 10, which is insane. Although I had one guy tell me that I was charging $3 for 4x5 at the time. He says, you got to charge a appropriate mark. And I thanked him so much because he clarified why I should charge more money. As I hit the $65 point, all my complainers almost vanished.
Yep.
There's a threshold, and I think every industry's got it. There's a threshold where you're priced down, and the people who want to take advantage of you and have got their skilled approach to make you feel like you're less than what you are, they vanish at a certain point. You're still going to have people that complain about it, but they vanish. So that was the first lesson, is increase your prices every 6 months. Now, this is what's interesting, because you know in 6 months you can increase your prices. But so 6 months from now, it's a long ways away. And so you're feeling pretty cocky about it. I'm going to increase my prices. You bet it's 5%, 10%, depends where you are, right? As you get closer to that date, you start getting scared because, am I going to be worth it? Are people still coming to me? Am I going to have a business? If I go up 10%, are those naysayers right?
Right.
There's this whole terror that kicks in, right? So what I did was we made it a deal. So my current client said, listen, we're going to keep our prices for you for 2 months. But the people who come in, they don't know what my prices were yesterday. I don't tell them. Right. Like, too bad you didn't come in yesterday, fool. You know, I had a price increase by 10%. So what happens mentally, and this is really cool, right, is that if you're not charging enough for your product, and I don't care what your business is, if you're not charging enough for your product, you know it inside. So it comes time to deliver your product. What happens if there's a problem, like say something got dinged or nicked or you couldn't get the red tape, but whatever it happens to be, your brain goes, for what they're paying, they should accept this, right? Because you know it's undercharged, and you assume they know it too. They don't know it. They believe they're getting a good price, the good product. This is what you promised. So you spiral down, because as you charge sort of less and less and do less and less, it cools down. But when you charge more than you think you're worth, you're terrified. And you overdeliver. You make sure that product's great. You make sure when the client comes in, there's coffee, there's tea, there's a drink. You double check that they're happy. You go overboard to, yep, because you, in your mind, you're afraid to be called on it. You're afraid that they're going to say, yeah, I'm halfway through this, Mark. What the hell?
You
should be doing more for your money. And that's your fear, right? And as you go up the price line, that doesn't change. Like as you, and it shouldn't change. I believe that if you get to the point that you are casual about your pricing, that it's what we charge. It's not a big deal. It's a lot of money, but yeah, big deal. Then you really should get out of it, because you should always be feeling that you're over delivering than what you, and people's going to call or under delivering. The people are going to call you on it.
Yeah.
And as long as you've got that desire to give more, and then you look around and go, whoa, I'm giving a lot. I better increase my prices. And I've since discovered that there is no ceiling. Like we had a photographer encounter. I was getting nervous about this. I encountered a photographer. This would be like 2 decades ago. And I've been around for like 40, almost 40, well, 43 years now, right? So I speak in terms of decades. That just kills me. Anyways, he was charging $150,000 for a photo shoot. He'd do one a month because he had a family, and he had a hacienda, a beach property, big property in Mexico, and every once a month he'd get a client, he'd go on location someplace, and he'd photograph them. He charged under $50,000. And he didn't work at Christmas time, because he wants time with his family. That was his whole benefit, right? And my mind's being blown, like $150,000. Like for 11 months, that's like 100. Those days when I first encountered this, for me, a number like that was like insane.
Yeah.
But it's a reflective thing. I encountered a guy, it was about a year or two ago, and he was he sold this photograph to, it was like a potato on the moon or something. Right? Now his lighting style was, he had a black background, a bare light bulb, like no soft diffusion, nothing pretty, no backlight, no dimensional lighting, nothing. People would come into him and he'd charge a fee and he'd take two photographs of them. And then they go away and he'd make a 20 by 24 black and white print. And he was photographing a potato this one day. And he had this potato up close with the same light he did with his clients. A harsh light of potato. It's like, imagine if you look at a stucco wall at noon hour, right? You know, that like every wrinkle comes up, right? It looked like it was from the moon. Okay. He sold it for $2 million. An investor came in and said, wow, this is
new.
He says, yeah. And he says, 20 by 24 inch print. He says, what do you want for it? He says, I don't know, 1.2 million. Done, the guy says. I'll take this one. Okay. Rolls up, gives it to him, right? And I'm thinking, how does that work? Like, some guy comes in, you're not impressed, $2 million. This is, so I did a research on him. Well, when clients come into him and they sit down with this horrendous light and there's no shadow and there's no depth and there's no retouching, it's like, boom, here's a print, black and white, here you go. And he gets something magical in his prints, though. Like, it's not as blunt as to make it sounds. He does capture something unique. And these are celebrities and politicians and high-end people that come into him. He charges, like, I think it's like around $75,000, $100,000 for a print. Like, it's not. So his point of mind, when the guy says, how much is that? It's like, well, that's like 10 portraits, 20 portraits. So for his mind, it's not, you know, I'm making one of these or five of these, whatever he was doing. But it's only the equivalent of like five or 10 portraits. Like, it's not a big deal for him. Like, it's not,
right.
His clients come in, to them, it's not a big deal. His name's attached to it. Yeah, it's, everybody sees the value.
Right. I think there's an important lesson here. I think, well, I want to recap for the listeners on a few things. So one is, you know, you need to have a whale product. I think you never know, like, whales are out there. So you always need a whale package. You just don't, know. And it's not, it's like, I remember I went to the post office before and I was trying to ship something and I needed to get there, you know, ASAP. Mm-hmm. And the rep was trying to talk me out of that shipping because, man, that's really expensive. You should just go this one there. It'll get there in a few days later. But I'm like, bro, like, I need this to get there ASAP. Like, I understand that that's your mental paradigm, but I'm coming from a different place and I need to get this there as soon as possible. It doesn't matter what it costs. And so this is something where a lot of people put this on their customers and clients. So you really need to make sure that you have a whale package. I think that's a really important one for everyone.
And that speaker told me that. I had in the back corner, there it is. So I'll move my head so you can see it. Which way I gotta go? A little, this is gonna shove it. There we go. Okay, I got my thing slow. Back behind me, you can see that a girl, it's out of field because she's nude, on a red background. Okay, that image is 40 by 50 inches. And it was my whale product. And I didn't expect it. And he told me that. He said, don't ever expect to sell it. Right. That's the framing price. So what you do is with your whale product, you start always with that product. That's when you start with. You don't start with your cheap one. Start with the expensive one. And so I tell people, I started doing this back in the 80s. So I'd say, that's a Rembrandt size image and it's $5,000. And now you pause because they're going to go, they'll say something like, oh, wow. I said, that's an impressive image. They'll go, that's a lot. So no, that's a lot of print. It's big. Ignoring the fact they're responding to the price and not the size of the image. So I deflect that. Then I describe what the image is, or like, it's, you know, custom printed, my creativity, dodge burned, archivally printed, protective finishes, mounted on a museum mount boards, and so on. Now, this is why you have to do that second. You give the price first and describe it second, because if you give the description first, they start adding it up in the brain. Oh, that's worth like $50. That's 100. That's 25. That's 10. And they're going to come up with a whole different price than what you're going to land on. And then you've got a problem. You start the price first, unapologetic. That's important. That this is, you don't hem and haw. You don't go, oh, yeah, so that print up there. That's, That's like $5,000. Okay, now let me justify it to you. Like, none of that crap. So what you do is you say the price, bold as brass.
Say it with your chest.
You may have to, that's right. And you may have to practice saying that until it just rolls off your tongue, right? Don't wait to say the price the first time when a client arrives. You then describe, and as you're describing, what's happening is you're giving your client time to absorb the price, to adjust to that's the new reality. That price is $5,000. Now, the next image we have, which is the couple behind me and the girl who's I photographed in Italy, those are 30 by 40 inch print size. They're half the size of a door. Well, their price tag is half the price. So we've gone down to, you know, actually it's $3,000. And those are Canadian prices, by the way, even though that's not relevant. And suddenly, that's a good deal. We've dropped 50% in one print. The next print also has a drop, and then the drop, and the drop. And so suddenly, we're going to somewhere find a zone they like.
Yeah.
And they won't work with it. Now, and I had a really good lesson. I'll share this with you. So I had a client come in one time. I was still green, still kind of scared. And his wife came. She had two photo sessions. Now, to give you a perspective of her, she came in and she had a limousine that she kept on tap for the day. So whenever the photo, she knew when the photo session would be done, she wanted to be able to go. So she calls her husband to come and see the images, right? And he reaches him and he is having a discussion with the leaders of China at the time. And he asks her if he could drop into Calgary on the way home to Denver, wherever they live, to see the surprise she's got for him. The same way you'd say to someone who's downtown, yeah, could you stop
swing
off
by
at the store? Yeah. So he did that. He comes in and we're showing the photo. Now, she was nervous because he hadn't purchased a photograph. She's a former beauty queen. She was amazing. He hadn't photographed a photograph of her since they got married, which is how many years that was, a lot. So he starts to pick photographs and he picks like 83 8x10s. In those days, we didn't have books. We had albums. So these are like, they were big. They're 43 prints in a big album, right? Adds up. And he picked 30 prints aside for a wall print. So I'm expecting we're going to go through these prints and he's going to kind of pick one and get down to one. That's what normally happens, right? Nope. They come up. He says, oh, that one I want. And he points that size. Okay. And then, and he's pointing to like a 30 by 40. And then he wants this one. He points to a 20 by 24 size. And this one comes, oh, can you make that double that size? And he points to my whale print, the red one, right? So it's like double a 40-50. So now we're talking 80 yeah. by 100 inches, right? Yes, I can do that. I have no idea how I can do that, but I figure it's got to be possible. Yeah, it's got to be possible, right? So it goes to this whole thing. Now, I had instituted as an encouragement thing, a deal if you bought over a certain amount, I'd give you like 10% back, mm-hmm. right? So we're doing this whole thing, and I'm in my sales gear, which, I mean, if I only paused a little bit, I would have done me shut up. But no, I went ahead with my sales pitch. It was like, oh, you cross this line, we're going to give you 10% off because you're great. And so he's writing a check. Now he's, the whole amount comes, this enormous amount of money. He writes a check and he says, you sure? Why? What's with the 10%? Like, is there something happening I don't know about that's going to bother me? No. It's just you cross the threshold. It's what we do. Okay. So there's nothing secretive. There's nothing. This isn't like, he's suspicious. It's 10%, right?
Yeah.
I'm going, my brain's going, oh, that was a stupid move. He was quite comfortable paying that extra 10%. Like, oh, look at that. A big hole in my foot. I should put that gun away.
Yeah.
Okay. So we do the whole thing. And his wife goes, so she asked a couple of questions. She says, so where are we going to put these? And he goes, we've got three houses. We've got lots of walls. We'll find space. Yeah. They'll find space. It's good. Yeah. And he goes, why, what, you bought so many and you've never bought any in the past, how come? Oh, he says, that's simple. You've never gone to a photographer who could capture your beauty and personality like these images show. This is you. This isn't some glamour makeup kind of crap. This is you, the woman I love, adore, I'm gonna grow and die with. That's what we're buying, is you.
That's fantastic.
And so you've got to have the whale. You got to have the print that's outrageous, that you're pretty sure nobody's going to buy, but I'll bet you, as my mentor betted me, in the course of a year, someone's going to
buy it, as long as it's there,
whatever it is.
Yeah. And when you even just by having that high price point, even if they take a lower price package, it almost elevates the status of everything else that you're doing. And if people take a look at what Elon Musk did, I think it's also a good example. He sold a super high price toy, right? Roadster electric car to the super rich. Mm-hmm. And that allowed him to prove validity of the concept And then he worked his way backwards down to, you know, the 30,000 everyday family kind of model. So he started off really high price so he could over, almost like what you were saying before, right?
Yeah.
You know, starting at high price first and then working backwards. Because if you're charging, if price is the only barrier of, you know, entry, there's nothing protecting you from some suicidal person entering the market. And even though they might be suicidal, they can still upset your apple cart. You know what I mean?
While
taking themselves out. Whereas if you're charging what you're worth, you have room to over deliver, you have room, you have margin, you have wiggle room, you can do a lot more. So it's almost better. And price is not necessarily, you don't want to deal with the price buyers. That's when you talk about you had less of the complainers, the price buyers, you know, you might, people listening to this, I know in some instances I'm a price buyer, but you don't want to have those as your customers ideally. Right. Yeah. You want to be the sought out expert.
You're right. Yeah. There's a place where you do price buy. Everybody does. And then there's a price where you want with that whole thing. And I bad math one time. I created a product. I was doing dancers. And that's cute. They're actually strippers at the time, but they're making a lot of money. And I had this product and I math and I thought it was a good deal. Then one day I did the math a different way and I discovered that every time I sold this product, I was losing $20. Like I was selling this product $20 below my real cost, my hard cost, right?
Right.
And then I discovered that everybody's trying to underbid me to get the business right. They figure, well, if he's charging that, we're going to charge this. They charged $100 less than I did to get the business right. Yeah. And so my first inclination was to go, I got to fix the price. I thought, oh no, wait a minute. I can be mean to my competition. Now this is really being mean. So I kept my price, right? Every time they sold it, they're losing $120.
Yeah.
And every time I sold it, I did an upsell. So I never actually sold that package. It became, no one wanted it.
This is such a good lesson for people. So copycats, because you can look at a building on the outside and you can try to copy it, but you don't know the inner workings. What he just said here, for those that didn't catch it, was pure gold. So again, I want to recap some of this. So he said that he had a loss leader front end and his competitors were copycatting, but what they didn't know is he had a next thing offer. He had a back end offer where he would recover that loss. So it was fantastic because on the front end, everyone thinks, right, you're losing money. And the people that just copy you and try to charge a little less, the economics of the business are doomed to fail to start. Because, you know, business isn't necessarily war in that we're trying to help people. At the same time, we are trying to defend ourselves. And, you know, markets are, I say this a lot. I heard this from Greg Glassman, but markets are unknown and unknowable. If I asked you how many people are in market for photography today, you could give estimates, Google searches, people talking about this online, you know, but it would be a rough estimate and you would never know the true number and it would change every day. So a market is unknown and unknowable, but everybody can acknowledge and recognize excellence. So if you focus on just being excellent at what you do, that will help you, you know, survive the test of time. You know, what is it that you deliver? What is the final product? Can you do that at an excellent level? And what is it going to take and charge accordingly? And try to do different packages if you have different demographics. I mean, if you help people find new jobs, I mean, homeless people need to find work and high-powered CEOs need to find work, right? Two different stereotypes, two different capacities to pay, two different experiences, a football game or a hockey game. You know, you can steal it online. You can pay-per-view and with a couple of buddies, you know, or you can go to a restaurant, pay for a meal and get it for free. Or you can pay for tickets in the nosebleed, or you can pay a higher price for the front. It's the same game, right? Yeah, but there's different price points.
Right.
So I think that's a really important thing that you mentioned.
Yeah. And there's people for every line. So the problem we come into is that usually as businessmen, when you follow this path, you are selling to people, you're selling a product that you yourself probably couldn't buy, that you are probably not your own demographic. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And so you feel a bit guilty sometimes. You feel like, well, like I wouldn't buy this. Like I couldn't put that amount of my income towards something like this. But the person you're talking to, So I worked in the theory a while back that I picked a number out of the air. It was 10%. So everybody's got 10% that's free money in the course of a year that I can spend and not worry about or feel bad about. That's my recreational money. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. Now what happens though, is if I have a client come in and they're making $1,000 a month. Well, they can only afford $100.
Right.
That's their low spending money, right? I talk to somebody who's making $1 million, they can afford like $100,000. To each person, it's the exact same amount of pain. Yeah. They can't go over their 10%. The one guy, he won't spend over $100,000 because that's his pain point. That's what it is. Other guy, he won't spend more than $100 because that's his level. That's his limit.
Yeah.
As a business person, I've got to understand that when the guy comes in and spends $100,000 or $50,000 on something, he's not even touching his pain point.
Yeah.
I'm terrified because it's way over my comfort zone. And I'm not buying my product. I'm selling it.
Right.
And so
right,
you've got to get right. over the fact that you are in a different zone that the person you sell it to is. Like the person when you were talking about your shipping thing. Okay. Yep. He couldn't imagine somebody taking that problem. I mean, that's a corporate stupid thing. And unless you're a big Amazon business, why would you have
right.
that?
Right.
Not understanding that you've got a need. You have a deadline. If it doesn't arrive, there's penalties, there's money involved.
Right. That's right. And he imposed his self-limiting belief on my transaction. Right. Yeah. And so we have to, as business owners, get out of our own ways, I think. And I want to recap some of the things that you mentioned before, where you talked, when I asked about, like, first how you got, you emphasize storytelling. You emphasize that you took on everything that you could, that you worked with charities, that you would do trade shows, that you had a Yellow Pages listing that was 3 times bigger than the others. Now, I know that Yellow Pages is kind of dead, but to me, what that means is that you made sure that you were seen, you were where the customers were, and that you showed up 3 times bigger than they did.
Yeah.
I think
even
that's
the
a
trade
really
show,
powerful thing.
It is. The trade show, everybody was buying a 10 by 10 booth. I bought 4 of them.
Right.
Everybody else had a brochure. I had a live presentation.
Right.
Everybody else had books. I had models. And that gave me leverage. All of a sudden, I'm an entertainer for the trade show.
Yep.
I always had a charity attachment to my booth. So suddenly, I'm making them look good because I'm raising funds for a charity.
Yep.
I've got live models I'm doing demos with. Suddenly, they've got a free booth, a free entertainment thing people are going to come and see. I bought 4 booths. I'm a major buyer. I can say, can I be here instead of there?
Yeah.
I get benefits. We had one case where the booth beside me was too small. They knocked over my TV, which is, we had our displays were on TV, right? And the guys came up with a large TV on rollers and said, here, use this for the rest of the show, no fee. You know, if you got the small booth, you're not going to get these perks. You're not going to get called first and say, pick it.
I love this. I love this so much.
They looked after me.
I love that so much. I think that's so important. Now, can you talk about, are there any habits that you feel have really helped you on your path to success?
Yeah, I've got a lot of them I've learned. You've got to listen. You've got to not think about what you're going to say next. You should know that by heart. You should have all these different responses in your brain you just go to. You've got to listen to what the person's really saying and try to figure out what's between the lines. Because what they're telling you their pain is, it's between the lines. And you've got to understand when somebody says, yeah, that's nice. My date's bad or something. And then you listen carefully and discover, no, they can't afford it. So one client, I came in and I said, here's our price for our print. Oh, she said, I can't afford one this month. We had a limit of 5. So, so this month told me she could afford it next month and next month. So I created a plan, which was great, which was a photograph a month club. So every month you pay us this money, price of one print, and you commit to 12. Okay. So the print, you do that for me? I can get 12 of these prints, but it'll take me, and those folks are used to working, making it. So all of a sudden I've got a cash flow. At a given point in time, I have like 20, 30 people because I listened to what you said. I can't afford that, them this month, but that triggered the word. Stories are powerful. People, as we started this show off earlier, I'm telling you stories and you are listening to me and you're reacting. And I would wager from those stories, if I showed up in the Philippines and said, I got my camera, can I do a photograph of your significant other?
Yep.
And you'd go, I know what he does. I've heard the stories.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what your product is. You've got stories. You've got stuff you went over the line with you've got people that would came to you and said, here's what getting that widget to me did. I was able to, you know, that wheelchair arrived in time. My dad could see a sunset before he passed away. That cummerbund arrived just in time for us to finish the wedding. Every business has got a story. It doesn't matter how hardcore and even cheap they are. Their stories are something they've done, something that they got into the business by, some that people can resonate with. So those are really, really powerful for them.
Learning your craft. That a case study. I mean, it's not scientific case studies, a little bit different, but you know, it's not even your story about your business, because some people feel shy, like, oh, I'm shy about, you know, bragging about myself. What you're doing is you're bragging about your clients and telling their stories and how you help them.
And you're the side result. And people make that connection. You're telling the story that you're right, that somebody did it. But as you're telling the story, people are going, yeah, he did that. She did that.
Yeah.
You know, and they do make the connection, even though you're not saying, oh, I'm great. I'm a superhero person. Here's what I've done. You're saying, this is my client experienced. I got to share this. This will give you goosebumps. You got to listen to this. The next thing is never stop learning. I've seen so many photographers, business people that hit their stride, top of the mountain, whatever it happens to be. And they go, yeah, I'm complacent. You know, I mean, I know it all. You know, the world changes. I mean, my craft, if you don't believe going through three camera systems, you have now a learning curve. I went from, you know, a big 6x4, and the negatives were huge. I get 10 shots to a roll. I do four rolls to a client. Well, they have to buy, if I take 40 photographs, they've got to buy 6 of them or else I'm going to go broke. So keep on learning, keep on challenging yourself, and not just in the business, you know, keep without, and then networking is huge too. You're going to tell stories. You got to have stories. You got people to tell stories too. That means you've got to get out in front of people.
I was going to say, the research that we've done, intense networking and advertising is a requirement, because like intense. And if you even think about it, and people just try to do some rough estimates, I mean, if you want to make $1 million, let's just set that as a goal as a company, whatever you're selling, if what you're selling is $1,000, you need to make 1,000 sales, right?
Yep.
So you need, you know, so what does that break into? So you need 1,000 sales. Okay. Well, how many leads do you need? If you're selling 1 out of 10, you need 10,000 leads, right? If you're selling 2 out of 10, right? Now you need 5. So it's, you got to figure out that math. And that means that there has to be a massive fire hydrant of activity and getting out there. Mm-hmm. You know, the business graveyard is littered with world-class products and services that nobody knew about. And so that's what jumped out to me. You were good at what you did. You were passionate about it. You know, you had something, a USP when you got started. And that's why I wanted to go back and emphasize that to people, that, well, also you innovated. You were like the third website, photography website, you know, online. So you were innovating in other ways to reach people. When you did show up, you showed up 3 times bigger than your competitors. You went where they were. You told stories. That's why I wanted to recap on that. And I'm glad you brought up the intense, like the networking part, because that is a huge requirement at all phases of business. There has to be intense networking and advertising. Just this basic example I gave. If you're selling $1,000 product and you want to do $1 million, because why? Like, if you're dreaming less than $1 million, you need better friends, first off, right? Like, even $1 million might be too small. You know, like, you may or may not hit it, but why would you dream anything less than that as a business owner? Because you can have a nice, comfy lifestyle, 9 to 5, get 2 weeks off, you know, benefits, all that stuff, working for someone else. What you go through as a business owner is not easy. So you should dream big. And you need to make sure that there's potential there.
I had a book. One of the first books I encountered was How to Make $1 Million in Photography. And this is back 1982 or something, right? And so you can imagine, like, that was like, that's, yeah, I'd be like $5 million now. And I didn't realize at the time, look at the book, that it was commercial photography and it was, you know, agency fees. So my vision back then was like, guys are making $1 million in photography. Yeah. That's my goal.
Right.
That's my thing.
Yeah.
And it's cool.
And then you got to do the math. So how many sales? That's 1,000 sales at 1,000. Yeah. How many leads do I need? So how many leads do I need to get that many qualified leads? Because not all leads are going to be good, right?
Then
how many people do I have to be in touch with in order to get the, and then where can I go? Where are these people? This is where most people, you know, they start a bakery shop because they bake great pies and their family goes, you have the best blueberry pies. You should start a business. And they go, you know what? I will. And they dream and make their logo and they do the design and the layout and they plan the menu and then they pick the location that suits their budget, not isn't where the people are. And then they open up and they invite all their family and friends and they come and make the obligatory first purchase, right? And now those people have to live in the real world and they don't want to eat blueberry pie all the time. They don't want to drive an hour out of their way to go get blueberry pie. So then you're busy making these blueberry pies because now you're in business, but then they're not coming back and you're going, what do I do? And now you have to find the market, right? And that's you know, a business exists to serve a group of people. You serve them one at a time or in small groups, but ultimately you exist to serve a stereotype or multiple types of stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And you need to be able to go and find them, you know? And
that's an important point because I've known very clearly who my clients are. Mm-hmm. And that kind of goes back to, no matter what your business is, a friend of mine put it this way, says, if you've got this kind of lure, which is your business, you want to go to the fishing hole that's what they're biting on. And so if you go to that fishing hole, you're going to come home with piles of fish.
Yeah.
If you go to the fishing hole where they're not biting on this one, they're biting on this one, you're going to starve to death. So you got to know who your clients are and where they live.
Yeah, that is such a huge part of this. So, Mark, this has been such a great call. I really think people might want to listen to it more than once to make sure they get all the goods out of it. Now, I also want to respect your time. Before we go into any of the other stuff, is there anything I didn't ask you that I should have asked you?
I know you're doing pretty good. You're hitting the stuff onto it. There's a couple things. One is expectations. So the rule of the law is that 80% of the business aren't going to make it. So you've got to really dig in to do it. I know you can go through cycles. So you're going to have, your business is going to roar, and you've got to be careful. You don't get too cocky, because when it's really roaring, a friend of mine had this, he had a really good business, and then he had a bad customer or bad staff member, just went south on him. Right. Yeah. And for months they fought to try and get him out. It was killing business. And he put a sign up in the back of the studio, walk in, he'd hold this, touch this sign that said, "And this too shall pass."
Yeah.
He'd say those words. He'd go inside having no idea what hell's going to wait him. Right. Finally, they got the guy out. Business took back off again. And he's going to his wife and he puts his hand on the door and he says, "This too shall pass." He says, "Dear," he's gone. "You're doing well." And Hanoi says, "This too shall pass." So it's cyclic. But you can't be fooled by it. No matter how good your good times are, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Market's going to change. Yeah. Product's going to fail. People aren't something. Yeah. And then it's going to pass. You got to dig your way up again. You got to reinvent yourself. You've got to figure something out. I mean, right now, AI is upending my industry, other industries, but it's going to pass. Like, you'll take it. We take advantage of it. I'm having a blast with AI stuff. We've got it's really cool, but automation, there's things that, so you've got it. I mean, more so now than when I started off. I mean, when I started off, cameras, it'd be like a 5-year time before a new camera would come out. And now every year, a brand new leap plug into it.
Right.
So whatever the new things are that's going to streamline your business, make your product better, you got to be aware of it and take advantage of it. So you got to be up on your stuff. You can't live in the past.
Yeah.
It's a future place your head's got to be.
Yeah. That's so well said. I agree 1,000%. Mark, you've got such great knowledge and info. I appreciate you coming and sharing with us so much. People, go check out innerspiritphoto.com. Go sign up. Go get some photos done. It is great, great, great work. It's beautiful. We talked before, you know, it's a blessing to be able to do what you love and get paid for it. And I love being able to talk to amazing people like you. And I just love what you're doing. And I'm even prouder that you're from where I was born. So, Calgary represent, you know, all the way.
You bet. That's cool. Yeah. We've got, there's also, besides my photography, we have a podcast called Fascinating Women. And that's fascinatingwomen.ca. It's a Canadian podcast. And I spend about half an hour, 45 minutes with each woman exploring what it was that made them who they are. Like not so much what their business is. They're not trying to sell stuff. They're talking about how they got tools, parents, environment, twists of fate, whatever. And some girls, they're in horrible pain and how they overcame that. So we're in our third season, 16 countries, over 2,500 listeners. And so I'm kind of proud of that too. So
what's the name again?
It's called fascinatingwomen.ca.
Fast dating?
No, fascinating.
Oh, that fascinating. There we go. Okay. Fascinating Women.
Women.ca.
Fascinatingwomen.ca. Go check out the podcast as well. And just go take a look at his artwork at innerspiritphoto.com. Even if you don't, even if you're not near Calgary or going to be working anywhere, you know, I just think he's got beautiful photos. So I would love to go to one of your exhibits.
The world.
Yeah.
When your people goes, I want to fly him out. We fly places. I've been to 16 countries, hoping to see more. So we're good.
Okay. So go check out innerspiritphoto.com. Mark, thank you so much. It's been an honor and a pleasure, my friend.
It's been fun. Thank you for your time.